the J-Talk Podcast.
Hello and welcome to the J-Talk Podcast. Ben Maxwell and Sam Robson with you. And Sam, yet another game of the season contender on Saturday. Well, we might have also seen the goal of the season scored as well.
Oh, I think so. We'll get on to Connor's goal. Well, what an effort that was into the top corner. Perfect strike. And yeah, the game at the National Stadium was a fitting venue, wasn't it, for an incredible game of football. So yeah, we'll get all into that. But the most important news, obviously, is my Manager of the Week performance in the fantasy football.
Yes, you were playing Fox at the start of the season, Sam. You've got us into a false sense of security. And here you are roaring up the table in the J-League Fantasy. And yeah, it appears... Maybe a little bit like Yokohama F. Marinos at the moment. You're on a roll and you simply can't be stopped. So, yeah, we'll wait and see if you show any signs of slowing down over the summer. It appears Marinos aren't slowing down at all. And we'll come on to, yes, that epic game at the National Stadium very soon, when we'll also be joined by a very special guest who we're looking forward to very much to chatting to. I'm kind of trying to keep it a mystery, but if you've glanced at the title of this episode, then you'll know who it is. But before we welcome in our guest, just a few items of J News I think we need to round up. Sam, we have the Golden Boot leader departing the country, while a once prolific J-League striker is returning to Japan.
Yeah, Aesuedo's pretty much agreed a deal with Cercle Bruges over in Belgium. It's an interesting decision. I'm not 100% sure if I'm backing it, to be honest. Generally, I don't mind players going to Belgium. I think it's a good place to go first and foremost. He'll probably get a good game time there. It's just with a World Cup coming up, he is very much on the fringes of that squad. And I was thinking maybe if he stays in Japan, plays in this EAFF Cup competition, that's the best place to prove himself to Mr. Moriyasu. When he goes to Belgium, he's not going to be playing in any sort of high profile games. They're not playing in any European competition. So I just fear for him that he might just get lost in the shuffle a little bit for this World Cup cycle. But in the broader scheme of things, I think it's a fairly decent move long term for him. And then, yeah, Suzuki back in to the J-League. He comes into Gamba Osaka. He's not had the greatest of times over in Belgium. He's flitted around a couple of clubs there, not really done too much. But he does seem to fit the profile of the kind of striker that Gamba will want. He's a lot more mobile than they've been having with Patrick and with Leandro Pereira. And we've seen the last couple of games how Sakamoto up there is still very young. But yeah, a mobile striker who has given them some different dimensions. So Suzuki can come in. Hopefully he can do a decent job for Gamba up there. So yeah, it looks like a decent signing on paper.
All right. And so just before we move on, how seriously does this damage the loss of Wader, damage Kashima's title chances, Sam? We saw Everaldo come off the bench and net their winner against Kashima on Saturday. Obviously, now a lot will fall back onto his once prolific shoulders. But simply put, Wader was the Golden Boot leader. And yeah, taking his goals out of the Antlers team is sure to damage them, at least in the short term, as they adjust to life without him.
Yeah, definitely, because they're going to have to change up the way they play, really. They usually it was Suzuki in kind of behind Wader, and it was Suzuki playing the balls in, and Wader, with all his good movement, was there profiting from that. This game at the weekend, they put Suzuki up front on his own, and then you're relying on the likes of Doi and Nakama to be the movement off him, and they're not as clinical as Wader was. They both missed reasonable chances in this game, and I don't really see Suzuki and Everaldo as a very compatible front two. So yeah, they're going to have to work out how they play. They went quite direct in this game against Kashima, and that may be the way that they go in the future. It's a little bit different to how they were playing, but yeah, there are various issues that they have to iron out. The good thing is they've got their first win under their belt in this kind of transition phase while everything's kind of figured out. But you have to see, once you lose a top goal scorer, it's always going to be a major blow. And at the moment, I didn't think they played that well against Kashima. So yeah, it's going to take a little bit of getting used to for them. Whether this really hampers their title chances remains to be seen. They've got a bit of money and they might be able to make a signing here or there to alter that. But yeah, it's definitely a major blow to lose a Wader.
Indeed. So, okay, one striker leaves for Belgium and another returns. And, yeah, be very interesting to see how Masashi Suzuki gets on at Gunma Osaka once he's found his feet and, got a few sessions in under the tutelage of Mr. Kato Nosaka. A couple of other items of managerial news we wanted to share with you before we get going with this episode proper. And, I guess to nobody's real surprise, Sam, Kobe dropped the hammer on Miguel Angel Lotina in the middle of last week. His position had become fairly untenable. And, some of us suspected they might have waited until the EFF Cup later in July. But, they decided that there was no time like the present, acted on their instinct, I suppose, to get rid of Lotina and welcome Takayuki Yoshida back to the sidelines at the Noriru Stadium. And, they got the new manager bounce, didn't they, on Saturday down in Tosu. So, maybe they should just sack a manager every week and just rely on the new manager bounce for a few months or so. But, Latine, that was inevitable. But the other thing we most definitely have to mention is the storming appearance by Albert Pucci on the FC Tokyo Kai Guys YouTube channel. I watched on like a, not quite a proud father, but I guess a proud uncle, Sam, that two members of the JTalk family, they reeled in a very big fish. And congratulations to Alex and Thomas for holding it together during that interview and getting some really interesting answers out of their manager Albert.
Oh, absolutely, it was a great watch, wasn't it? He was very open with his methods, with the way he sees football, with the way he sees FC Tokyo, their problems in the past and how he wants to develop them. I thought Tom and Alex did fantastically with their questions and just allowed him the floor, and they got loads of incredible nuggets out of that. So I encourage anyone who hasn't watched it already to go to their YouTube channel. It's a really fascinating piece, and he came over really well, and I'm not an FC Tokyo supporter at all, but he made me believe in FC Tokyo and the way things were going forward. So a great interview, and if you haven't caught it, definitely check out the Kai Guys YouTube channel. And less great news, I suppose, on the managerial front for Vissel Kobe with Lotina. I thought it was a stupid appointment to start with. Everyone knows the way he wants to play football, and it doesn't match up with the way that Vissel Kobe wanted to. It seemed like a panic appointment at the time because of their position, and now they've gone very much safety first. Yoshida, this is his third spell in charge of Kobe in the last 5 years, so it's back to what you know. I think he's going to be a bit more of a yes man for Mikitani. I'm sure he'll play exactly how Mikitani wants him to play. And yes, it worked against Sagan Tosu, but Lotina beat Tosu 4-0, so it might just be another false dawn. But yeah, interesting times, I suppose. They've got a lot of money behind them. They've already made two or three summer signings with more to come. So yeah, let's see if this is just a one-off for Vissel Kobe or if they can continue under Yoshida, who's had mixed spells so far with Kobe.
Yes, most definitely. All right. So, just on Albert Pucci then, I think he did stop short of calling Tokyo a suburban club, didn't he? But, I mean, I think he was intimating at that and, trying to make it really into the club of Tokyo. And, I certainly hope that he's able to succeed in his mission. Once again, huge congratulations to Tom and Alex. And, we're hoping to get a hold of the file, the audio file, and a release the chat that the boys had with Albert as a podcast. So, stay tuned for that. Hopefully later on this week, or if not, as I say, as soon as we can get our hands on it and get it posted for you listeners, that'll be, music to your ears. But, as Sam says, definitely get over to the Kai Guys YouTube channel and check it out. All right, then. So that's our news and notes section to kick off the opening of the podcast this week. And after a short hit of music, we'll pick up on all the action from Saturday's J1 Match Day 19. All right, we mentioned it in the intro to the podcast. I don't think there's any doubt at this stage of the season. It was the game of the season so far at the National Stadium on Saturday night. And, we had boots on the ground at Kokuritsu. Joining us for his J-Talk debut is one half of the dynamic duo from J-League Journeys on YouTube. It's Chris. Chris, J-League Journeys.
Hello, mate. Thanks for having me, obviously. Absolutely fantastic game. I feel privileged to have been there. And actually, we got very, very lucky We weren't really planning to go. We thought, you know, tickets are selling out. I don't know if we'll be able to get seats. And some absolute legend, never met him before, but he reached out to us on Instagram and said, hey, I've got a couple of tickets. Do you fancy coming? And we did. And honestly, one of the best games I've ever been to, not just in Japan, but I think worldwide. Absolute experience. Not like 3 hours before kickoff. It was packed out, fans from everywhere. And obviously, you know, you guys would have watched it. Just chock-a-block full of action. From first minute to the end. So, yeah, great game.
Yeah, it did look like an epic occasion. And, I mean, I've got to say, Chris, I was trying to twist your arm to get you to go to watch FC Tokyo versus Fukuoka, wasn't I? Because the two times you've done videos from Ajinomoto Stadium, Tokyo have won on both occasions. So
that's
I was
right.
hoping you would go along again. But, yeah, I have to hold my hands up and say you most definitely picked the right game and an epic occasion. And, yes, in Shimizu's 30th anniversary match, Chris, and well, I guess before we get onto the specifics, there'll be some listeners who were like me and Sam and not aware of J-League Journeys until last week. So just before, yeah, we get onto what happened at the National Stadium,
sure.
And just fill us in on the background of how you and Lolo started the channel and this epic journey, no pun intended, that you've been on over the past year or so.
Sure. So we've both been living in Japan for about 10 years or so, and we lived in quite similar areas when we first met. I was in Ibaraki, he was in Chiba, and we used to kind of cross paths just by chance quite often. We started going to games together, and, you know, when Corona hit, we struggled for watching live matches, and we thought, okay, when it opens back up a little bit, when you know, it gets a little bit easier to see games, let's try and go as much as possible. And that's exactly what we did. And, you know, we had friends back home saying, oh, we're so jealous. There's no live football here. Can you record a little bit for us? And that's what we did. You know, kind of started just for friends and family. And we never really intended people outside of that to watch it. But the fact that now it's growing and, you know, there's a bit of interest in it is great. We're very, very passionate J-League fans. And basically what we do is go to all the different stadiums that we can. Mostly in Kanto at the moment. We've got to branch out soon, but we go there, we rate the food, the atmosphere, the stadium, location, give it an overall match day experience with the intention of trying to figure out which club gives the best experience for a match day in Japan, whether that's J1, J2, J3, non-league. And to be honest, it's an idea that some people are doing in other countries, but we thought, oh, no one's doing it in Japan. So, you know, you never know what could happen. And here we are. So, you know, started out for friends and family and slowly growing. And if people like it, people enjoy it, that's great. We just want to share a bit of J-League love and get more people interested in it. Because what we find is, you know, when we go to a game, it's a much different experience to what it might be in the UK, where we're from, you know, the Prem or, you know, La Liga, Serie A. It's not really male dominated. It's much more kind of much more welcoming to everybody. You see people on their own, you see couples, you see old people, young people, so you see groups of, you know, kids. It's absolutely fantastic. It's a really, really wholesome experience, and we wanted people to get a feel for that and to understand that it's a much more kind of fan-centered experience and a much more fan-centered league, and, you know, hopefully people are enjoying it. So we certainly are, and I guess, you know, that's all you can really ask for, isn't it, when you go out and, you know, every Saturday, good excuse, have some beers, watch a bit of football, can't complain, I think. So led us to where we are now and led to me being here, speaking to you guys. So, yeah, having fun.
Yeah, I've really enjoyed watching a few of the videos over the last week. I mean, the Aurora Reds video has kind of exploded, hasn't it? You've got almost 10,000 views on that now. And just wanted to know, what's your kind of frame of reference from the UK in terms of what grounds were you going to over there? And what does the J-League do differently or better? And maybe what sort of things in the matchday experience could be taken from more European settings and to improve, like, the kind of atmosphere or the experience at J-League grounds?
That's a phenomenal question. I mean, for me, in the UK, I grew up kind of around London, and I watched a lot of non-league. I support Southampton, Lolo supports Arsenal. So I've been to most of the Prem grounds. I've been to Championship, League One, obviously with Southampton dropping down a while back. You know, I've seen a lot. And what I found, and, you know, this is not necessarily a bad thing, but football in the UK is very aggressive. It's a very kind of male-dominated space. You don't see many families or, you know, husband, wife, kids or whatever, or whoever wants to go. It's pretty much all men, all guys. Whereas, you know, the J-League is kind of open for all, which I love. I think Lolo maybe sometimes feels a bit differently. He wants a bit more passion sometimes. And, you know, I agree with him sometimes as well. If the J-League could take something, I would probably say to maybe take up some of the commercialization, make it more about the football. You know, it's great when you go there and it's got fantastic food. I absolutely love it. But, you know, sometimes you just want a £2 or, you know, $2, $3 burger and just get straight in and watch the game. Right. But at the same time, I love it. You know, I love the fact that, you know, maybe a little bit further down the line, if I had kids, I wouldn't feel bad about taking my kids to football. I know that they'd be safe. They'd be fun, or they'd have fun. They'd be happy. But some of that passion, I think, is lacking in a way. You know, you don't really get ultras. Obviously, right now, there's no chanting because of Corona. But, you know, sometimes you see people clap when a keeper takes a goal kick, which, you know, is cool and whatever. But sometimes you want to see a little bit more hunger there, a little bit more aggression maybe. But, you know, it's hard to find a balance. The Prem is a bit too much. J-League is a bit too low on that. But overall, I mean, I've never really had a bad match day in Japan. I've been to games in the UK and I've been miserable. And then, you know, I come here and it's always good. So I can't complain. I think it's absolutely fantastic. It's a league for everybody. And the more we can share that, the more we can spread that, the happier we'll be, I think. I mean, I don't know how you guys feel about it. Would you agree? Is there anything that you guys would add in?
You better take that, Sam. I mean, yeah, I was an Aussie rules and cricket guy back in Australia. So,
yeah, I can try. I've not had the experience of a J-League game. I've sat behind a computer for 8 years watching it from thousands of miles away. I got to Suita Stadium. It's a fantastic ground. I went there for the Club World Cup. And yeah, it was a terrific area, all the food and whatever you could want. But you don't get that sort of atmosphere of a proper J-League fixture when you're watching the Mamelodi Sundowns against Club America or whoever it was. Right. So it's not quite that. But yeah, it seems like a really welcoming atmosphere. I wanted to check out your Shimizu S-Pulse video. That's the ground I most want to go to. You've got the intensity of the supporters, the colours, and then you've got the scenery around it. It just looks like a perfect place. But then I saw you're an hour and a half wait in the rain for a taxi, so that sort of put me off.
Exactly. I mean, we got very unlucky that day. It was the worst rain I've ever seen at a game ever, and we couldn't see Fuji. We couldn't see anything of the, you know, any of the beautiful scenery. But, you know, adds to the experience, isn't it? So there you go.
Yeah, indeed. I mean, yeah, speaking of the atmosphere inside the grounds, I mean, it is it's very unique, isn't it? I mean, I think maybe by the fifth or the sixth time I got used to FC Tokyo supporters continuing on singing after the opponent had scored a goal. Yeah. It did take a lot of getting used to. But I was excited for you to get back to Nihon Dairo, back to Shimizu on the weekend, because I thought it was going to be baking hot and you would definitely get a chance to see Mount Fuji. But Sam will recall, I forgot that it was at the National Stadium while we were recording last week's podcast. And then I messaged you, Chris, to maybe congratulate you on the fact that you might get to see Mount Fuji on Saturday. Then it finally clicked that it was at the National Stadium. And you weren't heading back to Nihon Dairo. But actually, that really was an interesting video, the Shimizu one. And I think you guys made the point about how connected the club is to the local community. And obviously it is it's not a small city, but it's, it's not the capital of Shizuoka Prefecture, for example. And it's, they were the smallest city to be awarded a J-League club when the league launched, or if not them, it was Kashima. So, I don't know, as a panel, were we a bit surprised when Shimizu decided to hold their 30th anniversary match in Tokyo? I would have expected that they want their their fans there at Nihon Dairo to be able to celebrate. I mean, judging from the crowd on Saturday, it's, I guess, three quarters of the population of Shimizu made it up to Tokyo for the game. But I mean, for me, I was a little bit surprised that they'd want to hold it away from their fortress, as you like.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised too. But the guy that sorted us out with the tickets, he's in the supporter association. I'm not sure exactly what the role is, but he's quite high up, and he introduced us to some ultras, some guys that have, you know, not missed a game in 20 years, 25 years. And they basically worked with the club to put it together. And I think they had the choice to hold it at home, but they decided to go to Tokyo because they haven't had any success in, you know, 20 odd years now. And they wanted to feel like they were back in a cup final. You know, they wanted to feel like a big club again. That's what they said to me. That's a decision that was made between the fans and the club. And, you know, it honestly felt like a cup final when we were there. It felt like going to Wembley or one of those big grounds. And, you know, obviously they knew that they probably wouldn't win, but they just wanted to feel like a big club again is what I was told. I don't know how accurate that is, but it certainly did feel like that. And, you know, I met some fans who, you know, a family of four that have come all the way up from Okinawa as well, just to watch it. So it kind of really drew everyone together. I've never seen that many orange shirts in Tokyo either. And yeah, it was an absolutely fantastic atmosphere. Surprising, but I think everyone enjoyed it. Well worth the trip, I would say. Because I mean, a lot of them, because they're so passionate as well, a lot of them go home and away regardless. So, you know, for some of them, wasn't that big a deal. Just a nice chance to celebrate, I think.
Yeah, it turned out to be a great success. I think the atmosphere seemed fantastic. And I mean, the other option, I suppose, for Shimizu was to play at Ekopa, which is you've got a big ground there. But the atmosphere, it never seems to be that good, even for the Shizuoka derbies that they do play there. Everyone's so far away from the ground, from the pitch, sorry. And it's not easy to get to either, I don't think. That's some of the complaints. So just going to Tokyo, I suppose, is not that much different. And it does have that big match feel, all the atmosphere pre-game, all the works that they're doing, the fireworks, everything. It just seemed like a great occasion. I think it was probably the best way they could mark their 30th anniversary, and the football certainly lived up to that as well.
No, honestly, yeah, you know, even though they lost, I don't think the fans were too unhappy about it. It's something that they won't forget for a long time. Because, you know, when you're a club that struggled, a club that, you know, isn't necessarily expecting to ever really challenge, to be able to have an event focused just on you, I think is a really special thing. You know, there were young kids there that will probably never see their team play there again, maybe. And for them, it's a special day. So it was very expensive, apparently, for the club. But I don't think anybody's complaining at the moment. They really enjoyed it. And we did too. So, yeah, no complaints on my side, at least.
Yeah, brilliant stuff. All right, then. So for listeners that haven't checked out J-League Journeys video yet, I mean, Chris, correct me if I'm wrong, but basically you guys meet up, you get to the nearest convenience store you can find, you crack open a can, have a chat about what's in prospect for the match ahead. You wander over to the stadium, check out some food. You most definitely get some karaage.
100%.
And then you crack on, maybe some more food at halftime, and you sum everything up at the end of the game by giving some ratings. So the National Stadium, then your first experience of that on Saturday evening. You don't want to spoil anything, of course, for the video that's to come later on. But yeah, I imagine it must have just been an epic experience.
Yeah, honestly, I couldn't have given the day a better rating. I mean, we're not going to give this an official rating because we've already done one for Shimizu. This was more just a kind of let's go and have fun and enjoy the game. And obviously we recorded it. The guy that sweated us the tickets, Kota, we wanted to have an interview with him, pay him back a little bit for what he did. But it would have been a 10 out of 10 all round, really. I mean, the stadium, the atmosphere was absolutely fantastic. Food actually surprisingly poor. So if you're ever going to the National Stadium, maybe stop off at the Konbini on the way there. But
pack a sandwich.
Exactly. Maybe an onigiri. You know, whatever floats your boat. But beers were good. Beers inside, easy to get, nice and cheap. Can't complain about that, at least. But the atmosphere was absolutely electric. Best I've ever seen at a J League game. Which, you know, you'd expect, really, because it was a celebration. But yeah, I honestly couldn't have asked for more out of the day. Fantastic fans, good football. Lots and lots of goals as well. And, you know, it felt like for a lot of the game that Shimizu were in it, it felt like that they could have come back. You know, when it went to 2-2, you're thinking, okay, here we go. But obviously wasn't to be. But fun day all round, I'd say, for everybody. So, yeah, fantastic stadium, good people, good fans, great club. Absolutely fantastic day, 10 out of 10. Absolutely.
Yeah, the stadium itself was built for the Olympics, obviously. And how do you think it has managed to convert into a football stadium? And do you have any sort of comparison with maybe the London Stadium for West Ham and how they've managed? Which has done it better? That'll be the question.
Good question again. I mean, normally when you go to a big stadium in Japan, it does have a running track. But this also had, on top of the running track, it had like the long jump pit and all that kind of stuff as well. So you were a little bit further back than you would be in most of the other big J League stadiums. But because you're very high up at the same time, you know, it doesn't really impact the view too much. If you're at the front on the bottom, probably a bit of an issue. But I'd say they've probably done it a little bit better than in the UK. because it's the way that it's tiered, you're kind of always as close to the pitch as you can be. Whereas I think in London, it just feels like a stadium that's used more for other things, if that makes sense. I mean, obviously, you know, it's not really the case, but that's how it felt to me. But I, to be honest, I've never been to a London stadium. I've only ever seen it on TV. So I'm not probably the best person to ask for that. But if you ever get a chance to go see a game at the National Stadium in Japan, please do, because it is honestly one of the best experiences you'll ever have for football in Japan, I think. So, yeah, if you guys ever get the chance, please visit.
Yep, outstanding stuff. All right, yeah, so just over 56,000 packed in to the National Stadium. And, Sam, what a ding-dong affair it was, a seesaw battle. And, yes, it was, truly worthy of the occasion. Both teams scored inside the first 15 minutes. Takuma Nishimura put F. Muddy Nose ahead, but then Yuta Kamiya equalised just 3 minutes after that, thanks to Thiago Santana's smart play in midfield. Then, there were, what were there, four goals in 10 minutes or something, or just either side of halftime. Leo Ciara, who set up F. Muddy Nose's opener, put them back in front in the second minute of first half stoppage time. But then 2 minutes into the second half, Thiago Santana equalised for S. Pulse again, only for Ciara to then finish off a 10-minute hat-trick with two goals in 3 minutes shortly after. I think we all needed a lie down after that. There were, three goals in 5 minutes at the start of the second half. Unfortunately for F. Muddy Nose centre-back Ryotaro Tsunoda, he had an enforced lie down as he had to go off with a suspected concussion with the 20 minutes left. We hope he's recovering well at home. But there was still time for a late flurry from both teams. Rio Miyachi put the visitors 5-2 up in the 88th minute. But last goal wins, right? S-Pulse fans will have gone home happy after Eiichi Katayama scored with the very last kick of the game in the 96th minute. Sam, we've spoken a lot about F. Muddy Nose in the past month or so. They appear... they're going to take an awful lot of stopping. And, yeah, they were obviously pegged back twice here. But their habit of scoring goals in bunches returned again at just the right time. And they were ultimately able to spoil Shimizu's party.
Oh, absolutely. As an attacking force, they're as good as they were in 2019. Some of the link-up play for a few of these goals was fantastic. And you've got players that are maybe not as heralded as previously, but Leo Ciara is playing very well, took his goals superbly. The combinations from Nishimura and Mizunuma especially, yeah, really good. So they looked great going forward, but credit to Shimizu. I don't know if it was just the occasion and everything that got them fired up for this, but they really went to F. Marinos. And you can see that teams that will do that are going to create chances, score goals and force errors from F. Marinos. So they did that. It just led to an incredible game. There was even a chance, I think it was like 83rd minute, when Takeoka was closed down, gifted it to Osei Hun. He really should have scored, made it 4-3 at that point it would have been. And we could have been in for a barnstorming finish. We were anyway, with the goal that I had no idea counted watching on TV, because they went to VAR, I think. And then the referee just waved away and said, that's enough. I had no idea what was happening. But yeah, it was an exhilarating game. I thought Marinos, especially that burst, as you mentioned, was perfect for them. It was vintage kind of Kawasaki in the way that they used to burst through teams, and Marinos are doing it again. Yeah, and it's a terrific game of football. But again, there are signs there that Yokohama can be got at, and Shimizu played it really well. It was their best chance of winning. So produced a fantastic atmosphere, produced a fantastic game. So credit to both sides, but well done, especially to Yokohama for the victory.
Indeed. So, Chris, you will have gone along, I'm sure, in a retro S-Pulse kit. I'm sure you've picked one of those up in your vintage shopping trips along the way. And you guys always support the home team when you go along to a game. So and obviously with the Shimizu guys hooked you up, so gave you even more motivation to support them. But I mean, yeah, F. Muddy Nose, when they're in a mood like that, they can certainly take some stopping. S-Pulse certainly aren't the best defensive outfit we've got in J1. And F. Muddy Nose, when they're in a mood like that, I mean, they can look pretty unstoppable, can't they?
Absolutely. I think, you know, Shimizu S-Pulse knew going into the game, you know, if we get something out of it, we'll be very, very happy. I think we were expecting there to be a lot of goals from Munoz, and that's exactly what happened. And I think, you know, looking ahead to the rest of the season, if Marinos don't get caught, I don't think anyone would be too surprised, right? You look at what's happening a little bit below them. Kawasaki, what is it, 1-5 now? It's kind of Marinos. Well, it's for them to lose, isn't it? So, yeah, it is what it is. And Yokohama looking very strong. Shimizu at the other end of the table, not much they could do about it. But either way, great game. And I think, you know, Marinos will move forward with a bit of confidence. And hopefully Shimizu will take a little bit of a bump from having this nice event and maybe get a couple of wins over the next month or so, and hopefully get to safety by the end of the season. We'll see, hey?
Indeed, indeed. All right, so, yeah, fantastic stuff. And, well, what's next for you and Lolo then? You have been around. You've been to, you know, J3 stadiums all the way up to J1, and I wouldn't call it stalking, but you definitely wanted to get an up-close and personal look at King Kazu, didn't you, playing in the JFL. Unfortunately, he didn't make it onto the pitch that day.
Yeah.
You went along under the cherry blossoms, but that was, yeah, an entertaining video in and of itself. Just, yeah, the hunt for King Kazu. So I don't know how far in advance you and Lolo plan your trips, but, yeah, what have you got in store for us for, well, maybe the next couple of months if you're looking that far ahead?
No, yeah, of course. I mean, we have a Kawasaki video that's ready to come out. We obviously are going to release this Shimizu video. We're looking to get to Kashima ASAP. We haven't been to them, we haven't been to them on camera, at least. We haven't done a video about them. We want to get back down to a few more lower league teams as well. We're not entirely sure, but we also want to get over to Kansai at some point. We're trying to plan it so we can see at least two out of the big three Kansai teams. So ideally Vissel Kobe maybe, and then hopefully Gamba, maybe Cerezo, maybe Kyoto Sanga. We're not entirely sure yet. And we'd love to, this might be towards the end of the season, but get a game in at Nagoya as well. But lots in the pipeline, but also obviously, as I'm sure you're aware, you know, once we've done all the teams, where do we go, right? So we've got to think about it carefully, and you know what we want to do and where we think is going to be the most interesting. So we don't just plan it out based on, okay, this is the team we want to go to. We also look at games that we think could be interesting, and you know, opportunities to bring some good content. So I think also Kazu will be coming back in October, so we'll be chasing him down then for sure. But yeah, we'll see. There's also some good summer friendlies as well. I mean, we're doing everything we can at the moment to get tickets for the PSG game against Urawa. If we get to see Messi, Mbappe, Neymar over here, that'd be fantastic. But who knows? They're not easy to get a hold of. So we'll see. Watch this space, I guess.
So, Chris, you've been watching the last few months or whatever. You've got J-League stadiums, which can get full, but they're still not allowed their chanting. And a lot of clubs have got this decision to make in the next few weeks, whether they go 100% attendance, no chanting, or 50% attendance with chanting. Having viewed J-League games, which way would you go? Which would produce the best atmosphere?
Oh, wow, what a question. It very much depends on the team, because I mean, a lot of teams, even if they go 100%, can't fill out the stadium anyway when you go lower league. So if you go in lower league, I'd probably rather go 50% and chanting. For the top teams, I'd probably go 100%, because you know, if you're in the fan zone, you don't really need the chanting. You've got the drums, you've got vuvuzelas, you've got people clapping. It, you know, we can barely film sometimes, it's so loud, even though that's not allowed. But then you look at Kawasaki. We went there the other day, and I think their rule at the moment is, even though it's 50% capacity, they don't block off the top tier or a specific tier like most stadiums do. What they do is space it between seats, so you've got a gap in between every person, and then it feels full, it looks full. So if teams do that and they chant, I'd be very happy, because you know, it felt like 100% capacity the other day, even though it was 50%. So you know, it very much depends on the team, depends on you know how hardcore their support is, but top league, I'd probably, yeah. Probably rather go 100%. Lower league, I'd probably rather have the chanting.
All right. So before we let you go, Chris, in the spirit of a typical J League Journeys video, we better get some ratings from you for your first J Talk appearance. So first, internet connection, score out 10. Of 10.
Solid 10. No lag. Perfect.
Yep. I'll go along with that, Sam.
Oh, well, mine's conked out twice, so I'll have to go 5.
Yes, that's why we were late calling you, actually, Chris, because, yeah, Sam's just quite crashed earlier on. But, yeah, that's taking you behind
good recovery. The curtain
a little bit. Okay, next category, hosts' questions.
A solid 10 again for sure. It made me think a lot there. I mean, normally when I talk about the J League, it's the same kind of stuff. But no, it was new questions and yeah, very very well thought out. So I appreciate it. Solid 10. Thank you very much.
Yeah, I guess you weren't expecting this deep sort of question at 10:30 on a Monday night. But I'll definitely give Sam 10 for his questions. They were very well researched. Mine, I was blabbering on a bit, but give myself a 7. But and finally, atmosphere for your first JTalk appearance.
Yeah, so you guys, perfect 10s all around. I felt very welcome. I've had a lot of fun today and really enjoyed being on. So thank you so much. Solid 10.
Sorry for the lack of food options. No 24-hour meat vending machines here.
Sue, who knows? Who knows? See if you can get one. I'll ship you one over if you want. No worries.
You can never have to look too far for some karaage in Japan, do you, Chris? So, yeah. All right, mate. Well, it's been an absolute pleasure to have you on for the first time. And, yeah, continued success. We hope we can give the YouTube channel a little bit of a JTalk bump in the next week or so. And, hope we get more people watching your videos because they're very entertaining. And, please say hello to Lolo for us.
Will do, mate. Thank you so much. Both of you take care. Stay safe. And, hope to speak to you again. All right. Have a good one. Thanks, guys.
Welcome back. And absolutely tremendous to hear from Chris there. And great to hear that he had such a wonderful time at the National Stadium on Saturday night. So before we leave this game and indeed the leaders, Sam, we got a question in from Johnny Nickel for us to ponder on this week's episode. And it concerns suddenly prolific F. Marino's forwards. Johnny says that Takuma Nishimura and Leo Ciara weren't even in the conversation when we chose our team of the half season a few weeks back, but since then they've exploded. Do you expect them to keep their current form up? They're certainly on a roll, the pair of them at the moment.
Oh, yeah, both playing fantastically. They've come in, obviously, a little bit of luck for both of them to get the kind of starting buzz. Marcos Jr. hasn't really been that fit all season. He's not played that well either when he has come in. So that's given Nishimura a route into the team. He'd already been playing very well off the bench and scoring some crucial goals. So he's forced his way in. Leo Ciara has definitely profited, obviously, from Anderson Lopez's suspension. So and he's done incredibly as well. They've just found that link, those kind of four with Albert and Mizunuma either side of him, and it has really worked for them. So it's going to be interesting to see what Muscat does in terms of, does he bring Marcos Jr. back in? Does Anderson Lopez come straight back into the team after his suspension? But they've done their chances no harm, and it just looks like Marinos are getting more and more comfortable in an attacking force. And if those two are in it, then yeah, they could well explode. They've scored 5 goals away from home at the weekend. They just look like they're going to continue with that. So yeah, it's great to see. I mean, Leo Ciara was not someone previously that I'd had too high hopes for. He was always okay, but not great. But yeah, he's really profited from this. And Nishimura as well, considering where he'd been last season with Sendai, it's been absolutely magnificent. So I think the credit has to go to Kevin Muscat for getting this out of these players. And as I said before, they're kind of unheralded players to a degree that are coming in and performing. I know Kota Mizunuma is not necessarily your favourite, but he has been playing very, very well in the last few weeks. So yeah, full credit to Muscat. And if it keeps going and they stay in the team, then why not explode? And they'll definitely be in the conversation as it stands for end of season honours.
Yeah, most definitely. And you have to hold my hands up. Yeah, Koto Mizunuma has been in absolutely tremendous form in recent weeks. And yeah, 2 more assists here, both for Ciara as part of his hat trick on Saturday. And I don't know, dare I say it, Sam, is there a hint of the Daizen Maeda about Leo Ciara? He's often in the right place and, you know, within the frame of the goal to capitalize on, you know, cutbacks or, as in the case of his first goal, a driven ball across the box from Mizunuma to slide in on the volley. He gets himself into the right position. And again, a lot of that, I'm sure, is down to the coaching from Kevin Muscat and his team. But if you're in the right position, F. Marino certainly have the players to find you.
Yeah, his movement is definitely very clever. Just the kind of way he drops off to find that half yard when anyone's gone out wide. He doesn't have the raw pace of a Dyson Mitre. He can't just sprint past opponents to get into space. So he has to be a little bit clever, I suppose, in that movement. But yeah, the way he's just peeling back in the area for the cutbacks, that, or he knows when to go towards the last defender on the shoulder. He knows when to pull back. And yeah, it's just been really good to see. It's not quite a Dyson Mitre, definitely in that in the way that he operates, but it is really clever. And he's got that, especially with Mizunuma on that right side, there's a real understanding that's developed there. And with Nishimura then being able to read what Leo Sierra is doing, and he goes the opposite way. If one comes in, he'll go the other way. And it's just working really well at the moment. They've got that wonderful triangle together. And then on the other side, you've got Elbert, who's probably the best player of the bunch. And like, if you draw every defender over to deal with that trio that's working so well, it'll give Elbert space, and he has profited from that as well. So it's just a really cohesive unit.
Most definitely. And was it, correct me if I'm wrong, Sam, was it Pudini who asked a couple of weeks ago who we thought might be contenders for the Golden Boot, with the likely departure now confirmed of ISA Wader? It was Pudini, wasn't it?
Yeah, I can't quite remember exactly who it was, but that was definitely a very good question. I'm sorry we didn't get to answer that. And Leo Sierra at the moment is looking like he could be a contender for that. The thing will be when Anderson Lopez is available, and Marinovs have so many fixtures because they've got the ACL congestion to deal with. I just think they might rotate a little bit too much, and they might just spread the goals around and have a real force of goal scoring. It's a difficult question to answer, really, in terms of who would take on that mantle as being the top goal scorer. You look at, will Suzuki benefit from not having to play deeper for Kashima and May being the focal point in that team? And then you look at Machino has obviously played very well and got some goals. And you think maybe Muto could go on a run at the moment, that took his two goals this weekend very well. So it's a really difficult question, because Marinos are going to score goals, but it's just, is he going to get enough game time with the rotation that you would expect from Marinos? Because Muska has not been afraid to rotate his side during busy periods.
Yeah, most definitely. So the three F Marinos men are all tied in the fourth spot on 7 goals after 19 match days. Leo Sierra up to 7 with his hat-trick this Saturday. Anderson Lopez, obviously, with his suspension, is mired on 7. And Nishimura's goal got him up to 7 as well. 3 behind Wader, who obviously won't be adding to his 10 goals. And with just Shuto Machino on 8 and Peter Utaka, who moved on to 9 on Saturday, ahead of them. So, F Marinos in some pretty ominous form. And Johnny also says that they seem better placed than their rivals to hold on to their best players this summer. If we were in charge of their recruitment, is there anywhere you'd look to strengthen? I mean, they look a very well-oiled machine at the moment, Sam. I guess, as you said, with the fixture congestion they've got coming up, I'm sure Kevin Muscat would always appreciate an extra body or two. But, I don't know. They don't appear to be too many massive holes in their lineup at the moment.
No, there isn't, because the one main issue that I said I thought they had was if Kida went out, and they've dealt with that okay. I mean, they're still conceding goals, so maybe that is showing that there is a bit of a porousness to their midfield without him in there, as well as Fujita had played the previous week. He wasn't there for this game, so maybe you'd want an extra kind of more experienced holding midfielder that could come in. And then you look maybe at centre back, where Eduardo hasn't really played too well so far. Sonoda has done very well, obviously got injured here. Sanetto, we haven't seen him for a few weeks now. So there are definitely maybe that's the weakest area of the team in terms of numbers. So I'd maybe go there, but you can't see anything necessarily about that first team that you think that really needs sorting. They've got a very good team and generally very good options there. So I wouldn't tweak too much at all, but maybe one or two experienced, more defensive-minded players is what I would go for. But Muska, after the game, was not concerned by the 3 goals he conceded, so it doesn't necessarily look like that's the way he wants to go.
No, fair enough then. All right, well, thanks very much for the questions, Johnny. And, F. Marinos, as we said, spoilt Shimizu's party. But, what an occasion it was at the National Stadium on Saturday night. Absolutely tremendous. And, that's where we'll leave that game and move on to the rest of the J1 Matchday 19 slate. now alone in second spot are Kashima Antlers after they defeated Kashima Reysol 2-1 away on Saturday in the first game of the post-ISA Wada era. And, Sam's mentioned it already that, Sean Madoy was handed a role in the starting lineup here, which was, very pleasing for me to see. But unfortunately, the Prince, should have done better after his strike partner Yuma Suzuki nodded into his path in the first minute of first half stoppage time. It looked like it was going to be 0-0 at the break, but Kim Min-tae glanced in a header from Yuta Higuchi's in-swinging corner to give Antlers the lead heading into the sheds. And then just past the hour, Reysol drew level when Mateus Savio whipped in a delicious cross from the right. And Yuki Muto, who had only been on the pitch for 2 minutes, nodded past Kwon Sun-tae from 6 yards. Muto then spurned a number of chances for the remainder of the game, but it was an Antlers substitute who we mentioned earlier, Everaldo, who won it for the visitors from the penalty spot 8 minutes from time after, it depends who you listen to, a dive, a clever piece of play, whichever way you want to slice it. It was a typical Yuma Suzuki. I've typed it out as a delayed tumble to the floor following a minimal contact from Takumi Kamijima. It's one of those, Sam. I'm pretty sure there is contact from Kamijima. Suzuki looks like he takes an extra stride before realizing, I think I better go down here. And obviously the referee decides to give the penalty. There was a late chance for Reysol. Muto hooked a shot against the bar and then smartly headed the rebound goalwards, but his fellow sub Kaito Mori headed wastefully over. So it was far from vintage Antlers, but with F. Marino setting such a hot pace, anything would do in their attempt to keep up. And ultimately, this is a pretty important away victory, I would suggest.
Yeah, it's very important, especially, as I said earlier, they're having to play without Wada, who's been such a key focal point to their attack, so they're going to have to play a little bit differently. I don't think they played too well in this game, but they got the benefit of decisions, which they didn't against Nagoya last week. Earlier in the first half, Osoya was played through for Kashima, brought down by Sekigawa, and there was an argument that he was last man. Kim Min-tae was sort of there, and the referee must have just thought that it was just close enough to deny Hosoya if he carried through, so he didn't give a red card in that situation. And then the penalty, it is soft. There is an arm on the shoulder from Kamijima, and there is contact on Suzuki's calf. He definitely goes down in stages, and it's very soft, but it's one of those where, because it's given live, I think there wasn't enough evidence to overturn that decision, so they got a very soft penalty. And it was obviously the difference between the two sides. Kashima, I thought, played quite well, but didn't take their chances again, which it's maybe one of their slight issues, I suppose, with that. Hosoya has done very well this season, but behind him there is not necessarily the clinical forward. With Douglas out, they maybe don't have that, so it's maybe something they look to improve in the window. And they're going to get some money in for Kim Sung-gyu going over to Al-Shabaab in Saudi Arabia, so maybe they can look to improve things there. But I thought Reysol played pretty well, but were unfortunate with the decision that went against them. But Kashima will argue that they needed that look after it didn't go their way last week.
Yes, swings and roundabouts, eh? Well, Antlers then remained 3 points behind Yokohama F. Marinos. And as I said, in second spot all by themselves now after, Kawasaki Frontale's lean run continued away at Cerezo Osaka. Although, Sam, correct me if I'm wrong, from the highlights, it looked like Frontale started with a much greater tempo than in recent weeks. And they dominated the early chances and deservedly went ahead 9 minutes before the break, thanks to a header from their captain, Shogo Taniguchi, who nodded in a Yasuto Wakizaka corner. So the first half, at least, was bordering on vintage Frontale from what I saw from the highlights.
Yeah, they were much better. I thought they played very well in that first half. Some of the interplay was very quick. They were looking to go forward, looking to go over the top on occasion, just looking to break the lines rather than just playing monotonous football, passing sideways. They looked to go forward. Wakizaka hit the post. Ienaga had a couple of decent chances. Kobayashi did as well. So yeah, it was really positive from them. They took the lead, and deservedly so. And it's just defensively, they didn't deal with a few set pieces. And that was their downfall in this game, as it was against Jubilo, not dealing with set pieces. So they'll be disappointed in the result, but I think there's a template there for going forward that, yeah, if you play that way, you will win a few more games than you lose going that way. Cereza were a decent team. They are difficult to break down, and Kawasaki did get through plenty of time. So there's plenty to take from that. But yeah, I just think maybe play Leandro Damian, like the top goal scorer from last season. Maybe if he's in that situation, he might take a couple of those chances. But I'm not a football manager. Let's just continue with Yuko Bayashi.
Fascinating concept, Sam. I'm not sure it'll catch on, but I like the way you think. All right, so yes, Cerezo, I think it's fair to say they weren't really at the races in the first half, but they thought a penalty was coming when the referee was called over to the monitor early in the second half. So I think at this point, and we obviously have a lot more officiating controversy to discuss in the remainder of the episode, but from this point in proceedings, I think I will play the drop. This week in VAR. Okay, Sam, so yeah, a ball into the box was flicked on off the head of the Cerezo striker, Bruno Mendes, and clearly appeared to strike the arm of a Frontale defender, Shintaro Kurumaya. I mean, the referee awarded Cerezo a corner, so he obviously thought that the last touch was off a Frontale player, and therefore it had to be off Kurumaya, and therefore it had to be off his arm, right? So, the Cerezo faithful were they were cheering, they were clapping when the referee did his TV monitor motion, and when he sauntered over to have a look, but it wasn't to be for the hosts. Although, of course, as we'll come on to, they did go on to later equalize and then ultimately win the game. But I think this one had a few of us scratching our heads.
Yeah, I was baffled by this, and it seems like a few referees have decided to take a stance when they go into the monitor and not overturn their decision. There was one, I think, against Gamba a couple of weeks ago, and this one was very strange because, yes, there's not much space between Kurumaya and Bruno Mendes when the ball hits his hand, but it's definitely outstretched. Nobody can say it's in a natural position outside of your silhouette and all this sort of thing that they're looking for. And it's going towards goal. It might not, probably wouldn't be the goalkeeper, but it's going towards goal. I think it's a clear handball, and I don't see why it's not given as a penalty. This really baffled me, and I can't really see what he's seen at the monitor that suggests that it's not. Very weird one, but yeah, well done the referee for sticking to his guns, maybe. But yeah, weird decision, and it definitely surprised me.
Yeah, all right. Well, Cerezo, as I said, did shake off the disappointment of not being awarded the penalty they thought was coming when the defender Kakeru Funaki glanced in a terrific back header from a floated free kick into the box by Tokuma Suzuki just before the hour. So with half an hour to play and having been outplayed, as I said, for most of the first half, Cerezo were well and truly in the game. And then they went on to win it in dramatic circumstances in second half stoppage time. Another set piece into the box from Suzuki, this time from deep on the right, was a glanced on by Jean Patrick at the near post, with Junsung Ryong unable to keep it out of the net. And wild scenes on the terraces at the Yodoko Sakura Stadium as Cerezo edged their way up to fifth spot. And happy days for them, but for the defending champions, as we said, Sam, this difficult spell continues, and it's just one win in six in the league now for Frontale as they slip 6 points behind the leaders, F. Marinos.
Yeah, absolutely. And they're conceding sloppy goals, which is things that they didn't do during their title winning seasons. And much of that obviously is down to JCL playing. But these, especially from set pieces, it's just really poorly organised. The first one is a very good ball from Suzuki, but either the defence has to drop with it and head it clear, or Jung has to take command. But instead, the defence stays where it is on the edge of the 18-yard box, and Jung kind of gets halfway and is in no man's land and can't deal with it. So that's a really poor organisation. Maybe there's just a lack of communication between goalkeeper and defence in that situation, and the second one, nobody tracks the runner of John Patrick. It's very easy for him to get his head on the ball. So, yeah, disappointing. And that's a third goal now with the Iwata one last week as well. So it's something that is easily fixable, I think. They definitely know how to defend set pieces, they have done previously. So I don't think it's like the worst thing in the world, this result. Obviously, one win in five is not good for anyone, but I think there were seeds sown that they can go forward well and they can improve in that manner. So yeah, just cut out the basic errors at the back and they'll definitely be there. But yeah, it's this concern. I think Jesse L coming back is going to be the big one, and hopefully for Frontale that can be as soon as possible. But I think the credit has to go to Cerezo. They were very good balls into the box. They caused the errors. And, yeah, they took their chances. So, yeah, congratulations to them. They're still one of those teams that's on the bubble, aren't they? They're in fifth, 4 points off Frontale. And, yeah, they're going to be there or thereabouts. I'm not quite sure there's enough quality to be an ACL team this season, but they're giving themselves a good chance. Very good defensive record as well.
Indeed, and yeah, they're able to do it without their injured captain, Hiroshi Kiyotake, as well. So, yeah, a terrific victory for Cerezo. I guess, Sam, they're one of those up-and-down teams, though, that once we start to big them up, then they'll start to go on a, you know, like a three-game losing run or something like that. They're certainly not as consistent as, yeah, some of the teams above them, but the potential is definitely there, and as usual, they have a lot of exciting young players coming through. So it is exciting times for the Cerezo faithful. And as we said, yeah, a huge win over the defending champions on Saturday evening. Next, we'll move on to the team who solidified their status in fourth in the table on Saturday, Sanfrecce Hiroshima. Although it could be much better for them after, we all expected them to take care of business away at Gunma Osaka in their game in hand in midweek, but yes, their winning run came to a shuddering halt at the Suita City Stadium, and a huge credit to Gunma for steadying their ship with a 2-0 win last Wednesday. But Hiroshima shrugged off that disappointment with, I think, Sam, as regulation, a 3-0 as you're ever likely to see. Hayato Araki gave them the lead in the 22nd minute when he headed in a Makoto Mitsuta free kick, and they made the point safe with two goals in 5 minutes just past the hour. Firstly, captain Sho Sasaki headed in a Gakuto Notsuta free kick, and then Tsukasa Morishima fired past Ryuki Miura with the Iwata backline at sixes and sevens after a long header forward from Tsukasa Shiotani, and a failed attempt to cut the ball out by Yasuhito Endo left Morishima in acres of space, and he fired home with a minimum of fuss. So I think this will make Scott McIntyre happy, Sam, but I think we can move off this game fairly quickly. Hiroshima is very, very cut and dried, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was very easy. They pegged Iwata back through pretty much the entirety of the game. Iwata couldn't really get out of their half. There's an unfortunate compilation of Kenyo Sugimoto's appearance in this game, which is him trying to dribble it away and always losing possession. So you won't want to see that back, but that summed up Iwata. They couldn't get anything going. Hiroshima scored a couple of goals from set pieces, which Michael Skibber was happy to see. They haven't really scored from that, so to add that to their bow is very nice. And the defending for the Morishima goal was absolutely horrendous. So yeah, a day to forget for Iwata, but great for Hiroshima to bounce back from a midweek disappointment.
Yeah, that's terrific. You mentioned that Sugimoto compilation. I was going to say, have you got that on loop at the moment? I'm sure you can't get enough of that. So, yes, the greatest hits of Kenyo Sugimoto there. All right, fantastic stuff. And well done to Hiroshima, as we said, for bouncing back and, continuing to make things interesting up in the top four. I think things are heating up down the bottom all of a sudden, Sam. As we mentioned in the intro to this episode, Kobe sacked Miguel Angel Lortina last week. Takayuki Yoshida stepped back into the breach, and it was probably just because they were playing Tosu, but Kobe managed a 2-0 victory over Sagan, this one down at the real estate agent in front of the station stadium, and it was a pair of headers from that man Yoshinori Muto in the last 15 minutes that ultimately settled this. And there were chances for either team earlier on, and indeed 5 minutes before half time, Diego, the center back who of course has scored last week for Tosu against FC Tokyo, where he saw his bullet header from a corner saved onto the bar and then claimed by Kobe keeper Hiroki Ikura, who was preferred over Daya Maekawa by Mr. Yoshida on his return. But yes, ultimately, it was a pair of balls, one in from the right from Tetsushi Yamakawa in the 79th minute, and then in from the left from Daiju Sasaki in the first minute of second half stoppage time, that teed up Muto for his pair of headers, and yeah, both past Park Il-gyu, and yeah, seeing Kobe move on to 14 points with their third win of the season, Sam, and setting up a yet another battle of the bottom against Shimizu on Wednesday night. Should be an absolute bun burner.
Yeah, very interesting. They've got that, and I think they've got Iwata at the weekend, if I'm right, or at least fairly quickly. So very important games for Kobe. It was important for them to get away to a victory in the first game under Yoshida. They could be falling way behind. But yeah, they did very well, I suppose. It was a quite a tight game. I thought neither team really were in control until towards the end, when a bit of class showed with Muto's header. His first one, especially over Park, was very good. I will come to Tosu's defence here. I mean, about 10 minutes before lineups were given, they announced that they had two players out with COVID and three players that were close contact. So I don't know how late in the day they knew that themselves, but had to change a few plans on the fly. It was a kind of a weakened team there. I think it's got worse now. I think their game against Kawasaki in midweek has now been called off because of a cluster there. So yeah, difficult times for Tosu. So hope everyone affected gets well soon, but it definitely affected them in this game. They fought pretty well for most of it, but eventually Kobe, their class kind of took over, which it hasn't in many games. And yeah, if they can get Muto firing, then obviously they've got so many weapons, Kobe, that if they can get it working, then yeah, they'll be out of that relegation zone. So yeah, perfect win for Kobe. If they can go on and get two more victories, that could put them right in touching distance with safety. So it's an important week coming up for them, and it probably will define their season.
Yeah, most heavily. And yeah, you're right, Sam. I clicked on to check that it was indeed Iwata on Saturday for Kobe in match day 21. And it is. And yes, their Tosu's game away at Kawasaki on Wednesday night has been postponed. So, yeah, that's an unfortunate postponement that has been forced upon the club on Wednesday night. But anyway, yeah, they'll be disappointed to have fallen again to Kobe, who have obviously, as we said, only won three games all season. Yes, and both of them, two of them, against Tosu. So, well, yeah, for Kobe, obviously any points are golden at this stage, and yeah, to win and yeah, to score late on with Muto hopefully clicking into some sort of form. Yeah, could be a boost for them with, yes, the games against the teams in 17th and 16th coming up in the next few days. All right, well, yes, next we'll move over to Kyoto, and a team that we'd been concerned about in the past few weeks. Sam, Sanga had been slipping steadily down the table, but, well, yeah, in one of the most interesting games of the weekend, with indeed national team manager Hajime Moriyasu watching on from the stands. Yeah, Kyoto got back to winning ways, and Peter Utaka got back to goal scoring ways with the opener in the ninth minute here, his ninth of the season. He had gone through a bit of a drought, hadn't scored in seven games, but yes, for Kyoto and their fans, great to see Utaka back in business. But yeah, 6 minutes after the opener, one of the biggest talking points of the weekend, no question, Sam, with the Sapporo goalkeeper Takanori Sugano racing out of his area to meet Utaka, who was running on to a through ball. And, well, basically, he's pulled Utaka back 30 yards from goal, despite multiple defenders in the vicinity, including one who blocked Utaka's shot and another who was racing back to the goal. The referee produced a straight red card. Well, Sam, what a flashpoint this was. What say you? Dogso?
Yeah, this is really interesting. Obviously, he goes through, Sugano gets behind him, is in terrible position. It's awful goalkeeping just for the start. And he kind of holds him as if he's a little bit like a salsa dance or something. And yeah, Utaka I think the referee determines if the goalkeeper's not there, not holding him, Utaka is probably set. He's got a clear look at goal and there's an unguarded goal. So he could take aim from that position and it is a goal scoring opportunity. So I think, I think Alex Bishop did a few checking of the laws and it is allowed to be considered dog. So even if it's fouled by the goalkeeper and then there's players back and an unguarded net. So I think it's just about correct. But it's so difficult because there is also a midfielder that's retreating and I think there's an argument to say that he would be tackling Utaka in that situation or at least be fairly close. So it wouldn't be a completely unchallenged shot. So it's a really interesting one. I don't reckon I've seen anything like that before in terms of that sort of one. So yeah, it's a difficult one. I would say it's just about correct. I think Utaka could get a shot away and with an unguarded net there's a very good chance of it being a goal, but yeah, I'm not convinced of that. And yeah, what was your view of it?
Well, yeah, it's really tricky, and you know, you'd hate to be in the referee in that sort of situation. And obviously that's why they get paid the big bucks, because they have to make decisions in the blink of an eye. But I don't think that's the sort of thing you can allow play to go on and then, you know, refer that to VAR, right? I think you have to make a decision in the moment on something like that, because to get VAR's involvement and, you know, might have a completely different viewpoint, then I think as the referee, you have to stand up and make your decision. And whether I don't know the law in intricate detail, but, the first time I saw it, I thought, well, I don't think that's a red card. But when you freeze frame it and you break it down, and I mean, it's just a massive brain fart from Sugano who races out in the first place. It doesn't have to grab a hold of him. If he doesn't lay a hand on him, then Utaka might score, but he probably won't from that sort of distance, 30 yards out. But I think at the end of the day, a Sapporo supporter might not like me say this, but I think it's the right decision. And I think for the remainder of this episode, we're probably going to be slating referees. So I think I'll give the referee in this particular instance a bit of praise for having the courage to make a decision like that I think a lot of us aren't aware is correct in the moment, but I think yes, it probably is.
Yeah, I agree with that, and it's one of those where the referee has had to make a call. It's a difficult one, but VAR isn't, I don't think, going to get involved in this one, because it's one of those, it's a judgment call from the referee. He's the one in the thick of the action. He has the kind of gut instinct, I think, to say, okay, Utaka could probably get a shot away if not. So I think he's the best place for that. I don't think a huge, horrible mistake has been made, so I'm happy to go with his decision. So yeah, full credit to him for being bold enough to step up and make that call, because it is a very difficult one.
Indeed. So, basically playing the last 70 odd minutes of the game with only 10 men, Sam, is it fair to say that Sapporo had the better of it from that point on? I mean, they did ultimately equalise through Daiki Suga just before the hour, a terrific first time shot past Naoto Kamifukumoto from 25 yards. But even before then, Suga had a good chance saved by Kamifukumoto just before halftime. I mean, we've been worried about Kyoto in recent weeks, and they've ultimately gone on to win this game thanks to Takumi Miyayoshi scoring a minute from time. But I guess from what I've seen from the highlights, Sapporo at least deserve credit for the way they responded to the adversity of going down to 10 men. And Suga scoring again, and they appeared to have the better of it before maybe they just finally ran out of steam in the closing stages.
Yeah, I think that was exactly it. And I'm still worried about Kyoto, because I thought Sapporo dominated with 10 men for large parts of the game after it. They could have scored a few more than that. The goal they did score is just Suga. It just has that bit where he just hangs out the edge of the area from a corner. Anything that comes his way, he's got a very fair chance of scoring from it. This is another one of those. And yeah, they had a lot more chances and Kyoto really didn't get going. But it was probably a bit where, as you say, they ran out of steam, Sapporo, towards the end of the game. They weren't quite on it when the ball came into the area. And it was a very clever goal that Kyoto scored to steal the winner. The flick from Kawasaki is fantastic. If Moriyasu was there and watching, he's got to have seen that little bit of play. And just the general all-round performance from Kawasaki, as he has done this season. So maybe he's an outsider for this AAFF Cup squad. And yeah, it was a nice finish from Miyayoshi against his former team. So, and they got a bit ragged after that, as Sapporo usually do, with Nakano following in Sugano's footsteps, running into no man's land and almost getting beaten. But again, Suga was the one who cleared Otaka's chip off the line. So, yeah, other than the kind of brain farts that Sapporo had at the beginning and end of this game, I think they can take a lot of credit out of it. But Kyoto take the 3 points, and given how tight it is, this could prove vital towards the end of the season.
Yeah, most definitely. I hope Moriyasu stayed on to see, Sota Kawasaki set up Miyayoshi for the winner. Although, you know, national team coaches, they've often got trains, planes and automobiles to catch. So I wonder if he was still there in the 89th minute when Kawasaki set up that winner. But, I wonder if he was one of the players he went to check out with the EAFF squad in mind. Yes, as you say, a first win in three has steadied Kyoto's ship and, returns them to mid-table safety, now back above Sapporo on goal difference. All right, so, some controversy in the Kyoto-Sapporo game, and, from my perspective, at Ajinomoto Stadium for the FC Tokyo versus Fukuoka game that actually kicked off the match day at 6 p.m. on Saturday evening. It's ended 2-2, and I suppose, Sam, over the balance of the 90 minutes, I can't have too many arguments about the final score. But, it's just a shame that, as we said in the intro, what I will continue to refer as from this moment on, the goal of the season from Kazuya Konno in the 63rd minute, a simply audacious volley with the outside of his left boot that arced away from the Fukuoka keeper Takumi Nagaishi and settled into the top corner. That's just been wasted by what I feel is a really ordinary penalty decision to begin with by the referee, and then after roughly a 4 or 5 minute VAR delay, the absolute gutless the VAR, who has just gone along with the referee's decision despite having 100 different angles to look at, you can clearly see that Yasuki Kimoto has touched the ball before Wanma falls over his leg. But this just ultimately sounds like sour grapes. From a Tokyo perspective, such a shame that Konno's worldie has ultimately only earned Tokyo a point through what I feel is poor refereeing and VARing in the last 15 minutes of this game.
Yeah, it is a shame that any sort of goal like Connors is not ending up being the match winner, because it was absolutely superb. The technique, the cut across it, he puts it right in the top corner. No keeper in the world is saving it. It's a terrific effort, and it's just, he scored a few decent goals before, but this is without question his best, and I think without question the best goal so far this season. A terrific effort. And as you said earlier, I think 2-2 was probably a fair result on the balance of play. I thought Avispa started really well, then Tokyo came into it, and then Avispa likewise recovered pretty well, and so it was a fairly balanced game, which was great for, as a J-Talk derby, so nobody can be angry at each other, they can just accept the points. But yeah, it's a poor decision from the referee, and not to then overturn it, which is just, we see this fairly often when it's referee might have made a poor decision, the VAR doesn't fancy getting involved, doesn't really want to change things. Wanma, you can argue, he's clever in that he's just gets in front of Kimoto, but he's always going down. He's all on his way down before the challenge comes in. He's always looking for the penalty, and I think he sold the referee. You can argue that Kimoto is a little bit rash. I mean, just before the tackle, he just swings a ridiculous leg at it, nowhere near the ball. So he's not in control. And I think maybe that sways the referee. And he sees that the defender is not in control of anything. Then there's a collision or a sort of collision, and he thinks, okay, that's a penalty from his angle. And that is where you need the VAR to step in, because maybe to the referee's angle, it did look like a foul from Kimoto. But the VAR has to see that it's not, has to see that he's got the ball there. As rash as he may look, Kimoto, it's never a penalty. So, really poor decision. It gets Avispa back into the game, which is, it's unfair on FC Tokyo. It is. But I thought Avispa did still play quite well. So on the balance, I'm not against 2-2 as a scoreline, but it's a shame that it's decided in that sort of manner.
Yeah, I agree. Yeah, Fukuoka were much the better in for most of the first half. We mentioned earlier, Kobe would just love to play Tosu every week. I'm sure Lukian, his eyes just light up whenever he sees an FC Tokyo kit standing across from him on the pitch as he scored his third goal of the season. And yeah, all of them have come against Tokyo as Avispa took a 16th minute lead. Then Leandro came on for Tokyo at halftime and he equalized just 4 minutes after the break. And it was Connor who was involved. He saw his blast saved by Nagaishi, who I should say was making his J1 debut in goal for Fukuoka, replacing the dropped or maybe rested Masaki Murakami. You don't know. Murakami obviously made our shortlist for goalkeeper of the half season. But early on in the second half of the season, Nagaishi has taken his spot, at least temporarily. But Leandro fired in via a deflection after Konno's shot was saved by Nagaishi. Then, of course, Konno's worldie in the 63rd minute before Wanma, who, also scored his first goal of the season against Tokyo from the spot in the 78th minute. Late on, there were 10 minutes of second-half stoppage time, and in the ninth of those, Nagaishi got down well to save from Tokyo sub Hirotaka Mita. But, 2-2 was the final score. And, Sam, I'm pleased. Firstly, I'm pleased you agree with me that that's the goal of the season so far. And also, I'm glad that we can put a marker in the ground, because up until this point, I realise I'm quite disappointed in myself. I don't think I'd been keeping track on what we consider to be the goal of the season so far. So I think, from this point on, match day 19, Kazuya Konno in the 63rd minute for FC Tokyo is the goal of the season. And that's the one that's going to have to take some beating from this point on.
Yeah, and good luck to everyone, because I'm not sure I'm going to pick anything else to beat that. It's just such a good goal, left foot, great technique, into the top corner. It's just a perfect goal, and I can't wait to see the goal that beats it.
Actually, just out of interest, did you remember one in mind that would have been your favorite clubhouse leader so far? Because I honestly don't.
No, I have no idea. Last season, I didn't know either. Like the season before, we did well at keeping track, so I had a good idea of things. Like Thomas Deng might have been our favourite from that season, but since then...
Was that 2 years ago? Oh, geez.
I think so. But since then, goals come and go, and I can't really remember most of them. But Connors was special, so I will remember that one.
We'll mark that one down. Yep. Okay. Good stuff. All right. So two more games to go, and they were also draws at Gunma Osaka's Suita City Stadium. The host welcomed Urawa Reds, and these are traditional rivals. Got stuck in, as we mentioned, at Musashi Suzuki, Gunma's new signing, watched on from the stands. And Gunma were coming off, as we said earlier, a vitally important 2-0 home win over red hot Hiroshima in midweek. And they certainly had the better of the early chances. They looked like they were building on the momentum from Wednesday night. And indeed, they went in front in the 33rd minute. They went from back to front in the blink of an eye, and it ended with the returning Mitsuki Saito back in the starting 11 at Sam's request, who were chested down a superb driven cross in from the left by Hideki Ishige, and lashing across Shusaku Nishikawa. Shu Kurata then thought he doubled Gunma's advantage 6 minutes before the break, but he'd strayed offside as he was played in by Kosuke Onose. And Sam, up until this point, up until halftime at least, it looked like it was all Gunma. And Reds looked like they were pretty much second best and floundering around for ideas.
That's kind of been how Reds have played for most of this season. They did win last week, but in a terrible game. And Gunma were fantastic, I thought, first half. They carried on from midweek where they just moved to Sakamoto up front. And it just gives them so much fluidity when you've got a striker that's just going to move around and make the defence actually have to work for it. I mean, Patrick seems a nice guy, and Leandro Pereira, I'm sure he is as well, but they're just quite static. It's very easy to defend against. But when Sakamoto comes in, he kind of combined with Kurata, it was, and Ishige in this game, it gave a lot of problems to Reds, and they couldn't really deal with them. And Gunma played at a really good tempo as well. They were so keen to counter-attack, and that was borne out in their goal, which I think the last game had the goal of the season. This has the pass of the season. Hideki Ishige's ball arrowed cross-field into Saito, just perfectly into his path. It's just fantastic. And Saito takes his goal really well. And it's good to hear that Mr. Katanasaka listens to us, because Mitsuki Saito has got 290 minutes under his belt since last week's pod.
Yes, indeed. And Gunma have 4 points to show for their endeavours. It should have obviously been six. As we said, Reds were floundering around for ideas, but in the 90th minute, they got out of jail when Yusuke Matsuo was upended by a ridiculous tackle by Gumba captain Genta Miura, who left his feet and slid in for reasons only he knows. Alex Schultz fired home the spot kick out of Masaaki Higashiguchi's reach in the second minute of stoppage time to make it 1-1. But the drama didn't end there, Sam. Some Reds backers thinking that Higashiguchi, who was shown a yellow card in the 95th minute, should have seen red and indeed should be buying a lottery ticket, as he might have been a lucky boy not to have been sent off. What was your opinion on that?
Yeah, he is lucky. I mean, it's really stupid all round, I think. Higashiguchi claims the ball. Matsuo is running back with him, and he kind of just runs into him a little bit. Higashiguchi, for no real reason, just swipes a kick towards him. There's no real contact. I think he brushes Matsuo's shorts, and then Matsuo goes down as if he's been shot. So it's all round a load of nonsense. I think Higashiguchi could have been sent off. We've definitely seen it before where people aim kicks at other players and do get sent off. I think maybe Matsuo's theatrics have kind of helped Higashiguchi out a little bit, and there was only a yellow card given and VAR decided not to take action any further. But yeah, you've seen these given, and it's just stupid from Higashiguchi, a player of such experience. He shouldn't be aiming kicks at anybody, no matter how much they might have slightly nudged into you. So if everyone should just calm down and let's not do any more of this. But yeah, I don't know. It would be harsh to send him off, for given there is all he's done really is brush the shorts. But it's stupid, and he needs to learn his lesson from this, because he could very easily have been sent off and be facing a ban.
Yes, most definitely. All right then, so a 10th draw of the season for Reds. They sit 11th on 22 points, and Gumba just a point below them, down in 13th. And so the final game was also drawn. This was at the Lemon Gas Stadium. Shonan hosted Nagoya, and that ended 0-0. Belmare's man of the moment, Shuto Machino, missed two presentable chances in the first half. The second of them, just past the half hour, really should have done better with time and space to take a touch before taking aim at Mitch Langerak's goal. But first time he fired well over. And there was a late drama here, but ultimately no goals. 10 minutes from time, Tariq El-Yunusi's snapshot came back off Langerak's right-hand post as Belmare went close to taking the lead. And then with a minute left, Sho Inagaki's 30-yard drive was claimed by Kosei Tani up the other end. But ultimately, no goals to show for their endeavours, both of these teams. Belmare stay outside the drop zone, of course, with Iwata losing to Hiroshima. And Nagoya, again, just muddling around in 12th spot. The same amount of points as Reds, and two above Shonan. So, I don't know, was this ultimately like kissing your sister, Sam? Not really one that will ever really live long in the memory, is it?
Yeah, not really. It's not, but it wasn't a great game. Well, Shonan probably just edged it, and Matt, I don't know how he misses it. In the form he's in such a good position to score, and he just completely misses the target. But that was pretty much as good as he got for Shonan. Nagoya, speculative efforts from long range. Matthias Inagaki and Kakitani had a flying header that went somewhere close to the goal, but they didn't really look like scoring. As we've said many times with Nagoya, they have made a signing. Naldo has come in. He last played in the Chinese second division, where he scored a fair few goals, but with the greatest will in the world, it's not of the high standard, the Chinese second division. He did make a move to Chongqing, who were meant to be playing in the first tier this season and then folded, so he hasn't played for a while. So it's an interesting signing, and I found it quite interesting before the game. Hasegawa was asked about him, and have you got the player he wants? And then he answered no comment. So I'm not sure that's the biggest vote of confidence to Naldo. But let's see how it pays out. It's definitely it's at least another striker to add. But yeah, I'm going to reserve judgment, because a few goals in the Chinese second division, it doesn't necessarily translate to anything in another league.
Okay, so that's all of the nine games from J1 Match Day 19 rounded up. And, what's coming up, listeners? Well, a bumper round of games this midweek. I'm sure Sam is, can't wait to sink his teeth into all of these games kicking off at roughly the same time on Wednesday night. Although, as we've just exclusively revealed earlier on in the episode, yes, the Kawasaki versus Tosu game has been postponed. And ironically, that was one of the ones I was looking forward to the most, as, of course, Tosu always give Kawasaki a game at Todoroki. Frontale won 1-0 there last year, but the two teams have played out draws the four previous seasons they'd met at Todoroki. Well, we'll have to wait until later on in the season for that game to take place. But, what am I doing? I'm burying the lead. It's the game of the season so far, I would wager, Sam. I would be looking forward to this even more than if F. Marinos were playing Kashima on Wednesday night. It's the current leaders hosting the red-hot Sanfrecce Hiroshima side, who are fourth in the table. F. Marinos have won five straight, and Hiroshima five of their last six. Of course, the only hiccup in there was last Wednesday night at Gunma Osaka. But this one has all the elements of a classic, I would suggest. And, I'm sure this will be on your main screen at 7 o'clock on Wednesday night.
Oh, yeah, I'm sorry if any of the write-ups for the other games don't get as much attention, because this is absolutely the focus. It's a perfect game and a perfect clash of styles, I think. F. Mario's so free-flowing, so lovely build-up and whatnot, but susceptible to a bit of a pressure at the back. Hiroshima are built on winning the ball high up the pitch and causing errors, so I think it's a really interesting game. Obviously, Hiroshima's defence is usually pretty watertight as well, so they don't usually come up against such movement as Marinos will provide. So how do they hold up against them, and can they cause the errors going the other way? I think it's a fascinating game, and I agree with you in terms of this is game of the season. So we've got that one on one screen. I'm going to have the relegation six-pointer of Vissel Kobe and Shimizu S-Pulse on the other one. So, yeah, good luck to anyone wanting news on Shonan versus Gamba, because it might be a little bit short.
Yes, at least I know you'll give us the fantasy leaders for that in your Patreon write-up, Sam. But, I can fully understand you won't be paying too much attention to, a number of these games. Iwata Fukuoka in the same boat, I would imagine, and even FC Tokyo Sapporo as well. But, yeah, there are some real crackers, not only F. Marinos Hiroshima. As you mentioned there, the battle of the bottom, Kobe hosting Shimizu. Indeed, Vissel will haul themselves off the bottom and will send S-Pulse to the cellar if they can win at the Noivir Stadium on Wednesday night. Well, we also have the small matter of second versus fifth, Kashima hosting Cerezo Osaka. So, there's something for everyone to look forward to on Wednesday night. Yes, some absolute cracking fixtures in there. And, can't wait for those. Then on Saturday, match day 21, no rest for the wicked, of course, listeners. And the leaders, F. Marinos, travel to Cerezo Osaka for, yes, another crunch game for them, while Antlers are away in Sapporo. That could be absolutely anything, that game. And as Sam's mentioned, yes, Kobe Iwata is another six-pointer down in the bottom three. So, so much to look forward to over the coming days in J1, and the patrons have your Wednesday write up to look forward to, Sam. But then you're heading away for a bit of a break. So Johnny Nicol will be joining me for next week's roundup of the match day 21 fixtures.
Yeah, I am away in Ireland. We've sought out some long-lost family members that are currently living in Ireland, so we're going to meet them. So that's going to be really interesting, and looking forward to that. And Johnny will be very capable hands, so I just have to hope not too capable, so that I still have a gig to get back to the following week.
Yes. Well, obviously, we always look forward to hearing from Johnny. And indeed, I was just about to thank him for his questions on F. Marinos on this week's episode. So thanks to Johnny. Thanks to Chris, of course, as well, from J-League Journeys for his stellar performance earlier on in the episode. And listeners, can't recommend them highly enough. Get over to YouTube and search J-League Journeys. And a number of videos as we said earlier, different levels of the J-League and even down to non-league with Musashino in Tokyo as well. So, terrific videos from Chris and Lolo, and very enjoyable content on YouTube. And yeah, before we go, a shout out to Craig, our newest patron who came on board over the past week. So, all right, Sam, we'll leave it there. A terrific episode. And once again, yes, enjoy yourself on Wednesday night and more importantly, on your holidays over in Ireland.
Thank you very much. I will do. And yes, full focus is on this midweek round. I'll get it out as soon as I can. Hopefully not too late.
All right. No worries at all. As I said, looking forward to that. I'm sure our patrons are as well. So that's it for this week's episode of the Jake Talk podcast. I've already done all their thank yous, haven't I? So I'll just finally say thanks to all of our patrons for their ongoing support on Patreon. And thanks to you listeners for listening wherever you are. I'll be back next week with Johnny to round up J1 Match Day 21. Speak to you next week. Bye for now.
The J Talk podcast. Yes, 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 yes.